Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge. Welcome to Voice of the Cape Drive Time. Time now to have a special package on the 7th annual Wasatia Conference that was hosted this year at the Cape Town Castle by IPSA and by AMEC, the Afro-Middle East Center, Islamic Peace College of South Africa. The theme this year was Understanding ISIS. Yasin Kippi was there and he produced this package.
The rise of ISIS in South Africa was the topic of discussion at the 7th annual Wasatia Conference presented by IPSA at the Castle of Good Hope this past Saturday. With emphasis on the root causes of the recruitment of South Africans to the group, ISIS-based ideologies and the theory of media were highlighted. Imam Rashid Umar of the Clayman Main Road Mosque begins.
On Saturday, July 9th, 2016, we received the disturbing news of the arrest of four young people in Gauteng province on charges relating to planning acts of terror on South African soil in support of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. On Monday, July 11, 2016, 24-year-old twin brothers Yakin Tulsi aka Brandon Lee and Salahuddin, also known as Tony Lee Tulsi, appeared in the Johannesburg Magistrate Court on charges of three counts relating to fraud and terrorism. These charges include attempting to travel to Syria to join ISIS, planning to bomb a United States embassy in Pretoria, as well as an unidentified Jewish building in Johannesburg, and planning to assassinate local cartoonist Jonathan Shapiro, who created a cartoon mocking the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him.
With the increase of global connectivity, the theory of ISIS in the media has often been construed with the real issues of ISIS not highlighted. Khadija Patel speaks.
Are there bigots in South Africa? Yes, there are bigots in our mosques, there are bigots in our temples, there are bigots in our churches, as there are bigots in Parliament. I think, however, that one of the greatest failings of us in South Africa, as media professionals in South Africa, as part of this global mass media machine, is our collective failure here to be able to unpack what is happening with actual specifics. I received an op-ed from a researcher who I know has been spending a lot of time analyzing issues of radicalization, and speaking to people who have sympathies for the IS group. So this person sent this op-ed to me, for consideration for publication. So as I had a look at it, so there were several claims in it. Number one, it starts off by saying, for example, that South Africa is basically the center funneling terror-related funds in the whole world. So South Africa is sort of the capital of all that. So it's, it starts off with this. Anyway, the point of this piece was to say that there appears to be a change in the tactics of South African recruits to the IS group, that they're no longer being encouraged to go to IS territories, they're now encouraged to do the work here. So that was basically the ostensible thrust of the speech, which is interesting, and I think you'd all agree, worth publication. But when I looked at what is the basis for this, it was based on 8 interviews over Twitter. So this is a problem as well that journalists face, in that we are dealing with a phenomenon that is so murky, addled by complications of Twitter and compounded by our own constraints within the newsroom. This then gives you an idea of the kind of space that we are working with. But I think that the point that I'm trying to make here is that there certainly has been significant weaknesses in the treatment of particularly IS sympathy within South Africa. But what I was saying is a lot of it is not unique to the subject, but rather a symptom of greater weaknesses within South African newsrooms. But at the same time, when South African newsrooms have taken up this topic, they've done so in a way that mimics big English-speaking news media around the world, in that it seeks to emphasize the brutalized Westerner instead of actually looking at the reality in that actual Iraqis and Syrians are the greatest victims of the IS.
In order to get into some insights of ISIS-based ideologies, I interviewed Ibrahim Gangat from Salam Media. I asked him if he condemns ISIS.
As far as the Islamic State is concerned, we obviously don't have clear-cut information about exactly, who they all consist of, who are the leaders in terms of, the Amir and so forth. We try and get an understanding of the reason why ISIS has basically been formed. And because of not being able to establish, through verified sources who these people are, we tend to find that it's still a bit cloudy, it's a bit hazy as far as there's concerned. So we can't actually make any specific findings or maybe pronouncement on ISIS itself as such.
The times that ISIS, in the media have claimed responsibility for certain actions and bombings and different, and also the videos that come out on social media of beheadings, is that not clear-cut, evidence of the actions?
No. It depends on, how involved you probably are in media to have some bit of understanding of it. We have seen the type of reports that have emerged, sometimes how fake they are, sometimes how they are put forward. And because it is so distant away, we find there are people that have various agendas. When they do promote, especially in terms of media, it's a very powerful tool to use in whichever direction you want to sort of put forward any specific agenda. So we don't know what to believe, because after a while you believe that this is something fake, this is Photoshopped, and so forth. Although it is all there, and where it's coming from, who's putting it forward, and what is the purpose thereof, that makes it a bit difficult to make, a definite pronouncement on it. You can speculate, it's fine, but you can't make definite pronouncements on it as such.
Now, does Salam Media ever report on ISIS?
We don't report on ISIS at this point in time. We haven't touched anything. During the time a while back when ISIS was around there and there was access through social media to various different groupings of people that left South Africa and talked about their experiences with ISIS, we would then take some of that information and we would then put that forward for the people, because these were people that could be contacted, and not necessarily from Salam Media, but various sources of other people. They even appeared on groupings, public groupings, to talk about the reasons why they are there for and so forth.
Now, have any of them, condoned or condemned ISIS?
The ones that were there, no. They did not condemn ISIS because they were basically part of that particular grouping. And, the reasons thereof that religiously you need a khilafah, and why a khilafah is necessary and so forth. So they would project, and actually the reasons why they then went across and joined them. But obviously all that has now, to a great extent, been cut off. There isn't any source of information that one can be able to get from that area, or from people that you know and so forth.
Now, in terms of the ideologies of the people that you've met that have joined ISIS in the past, do you find you agree with many of the ideologies?
I agree with the ideology of Islam that should be established in the world and with our time that we left the Khilafah in 1924, that we have the answers for a lot of the problems the world is experiencing today. And in this particular respect, we can help in many respects, like, for example, the various many forms of isms that are running around, like, you know, the problems of the socialism, capitalism, all this type of thing that's never brought, especially even to people beyond the scope and pale of Islam. Even those people are hankering after some type of a solution. Islam has that particular solution. So the ideology of wanting to establish Islam as a method and a system, like the way the Prophet ﷺ did it many years ago, can be very beneficial in greater, you know, respect for people right across the globe, wherever they are. It means to solve a problem. If we have to drop in this particular instance, an economic policy that is free of interest and everything else that goes along, very profound, very, you know, wonderful for Islam, and for the people at large that are suffering, and we see this suffering taking place, but we cannot, you know, come up with the answers, although they all are there. We cannot come up. In that instance, if something like that is brought forward to assist the world in this instance, then, alhamdulillah, I think it's the only and the right way to go. There's no other way to go.
Do you condone suicide bombing that people do in order to, you know, create a greater benefit in society?
Suicide bombing, yes, that is, it's something that one thinks about very carefully, and at time you have to maybe, you know, give it some bit of credit in what respect. For example, if now there's been a couple of attacks taking place in Europe at the Brussels, at the airport and so forth, when we go back and we have a look, the people that are directly involved in promoting a type of, you know, reckless killing of innocent civilians, then forces someone to leave the place where he is and comes out to do the type of suicide bombing. A young 10-year-old boy seeing his house completely demolished, annihilated, obliterated, father and mother being killed by a drone, not knowing for what reason, away from all the things that's happening in the conflict, then develops within him such type of hatred that, you know, this has been done to my people, and then grows up with that resentment and comes out and then goes back to a certain place. And although it can be said that the people at that particular airport or wherever they are people that are innocent and know nothing, the country has taken that, and they have basically carried out. That means, if, for example, a country like Belgium, they go out, and you have a recording of the number of bombs they've thrown. They mention it and say, this is the type of things that we are doing in these areas, whether Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, wherever. And innocent people are dying, which whatever language they want to use and call collateral damage, whatever they want to talk about. But innocent people are dying. And with the result, that resentment that comes out of there will visit some place or some people someday. And that is the reason why, I don't know if it's a correct word or maybe, you know, to say we give justification, but it will come back to us, you know, in the same way as apartheid has, you know, happened in South Africa, and people have been, you know, very badly affected by apartheid, would then, you know, go out and say, for example, go to a farm murder, you know, or, you know, and kill somebody out there, and sometimes say to you that, look, this is what happened to my parents, 30 years of absolute suffering and oppression and everything else that happened to them. And we grew up in such sort of very oppressive conditions and injustices that, you know, this is now, and it just continues. So we sort of come out and do this type of things. So I don't know if I'm expressing myself correctly in the sense that the suicide bombing comes about because of continuous interference in countries where many of these shouldn't be. In those places shouldn't be there, and they continue, and they build up this type of hatred within people to come back and do the suicide bombing.
But so you're saying that the ISIS, that the suicide bombing that ISIS employs, the disguise of a religion, is incorrect.
It's incorrect.
Okay.
It's definitely incorrect in what they are doing, in especially the disguise of religious. You know, the religious carb on it. I said no. I wouldn't accept that. Yeah.
That's very.
With the rise of the rhetoric displayed by Ibrahim Ganga, the need for a radical traditional understanding looms greater than ever before. The Deputy Mufti of Palestine, Sheikh Ibrahim Khalil Awadallah, speaks, translated by Sheikh Ihsan Talib.
That he is here and completely stating and declaring in no uncertain terms that we as Muslims and the Deen of Islam and we as a people, we are against extremism of all kinds. science, and that we are against extremism in deen and even in calling to deen. When we call to deen, we utilize the principles and the mechanisms and the methodologies of the Quran, which are methodologies of dignity and honor, which are expressed unto humanity before you can expect of them to accept your message. And so this is our manhaj, this is our methodology, this is also our philosophy, and this is the method that we follow in the formulation even of our ahkam.
The South African government has also become more wary of the situation, with new police minister Fikile Mbalula also at the symposium.
Well, the symposium is important to highlight a very critical question of radical extremism, and then from a policy point of view, how do we position ourselves as a country in our approach in terms of fighting extremism and terrorism, and in particular focusing on the question of ISIS. I think it's an important thing because it seeks to empower us ideologically to understand exactly the root causes of this, and it enriches our approach going forward in terms of the state. How do we intervene to deal with some of these issues?
With the bilateral meetings between U.S. President Donald Trump and Middle Eastern leaders, the rise of ISIS seems like it will come to an end. But while the manifestation of ISIS may be violent extremism, the root is in non-violent ideological extremism, which we all need to be aware of.
It is important to note that acknowledgement of the problem of extremism within our ranks, it doesn't undermine our iman or our faith. But it helps us to grow together to become a stronger community. In doing so, we become more aware of the challenges we face. And then we will be able to authentically mitigate.
That we cannot stand aside. You can't pretend to be moderate or in the middle, but standing aside. You have to be in the center of the action. That is what is also implied by the notion of wasata. So wasata is not a passive moderation, if you like. It is an active engagement from a balanced perspective.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
And that was Yasin Kipi's feature on the Wasatiyah Symposium that was held at the castle over the weekend, hosted by IPSA and AMEC. And just for the record, Police Minister Mr. Fikile Mbalula did not say that the Western Cape was a hub or a hive for extremism in South Africa, as alleged by a journalist at the weekend, Argus. His stories going on the independent online website and also being used by the Daily Voice today. So if you see those stories where it's claimed that at this particular symposium that the Minister of Police, Mr. Mbalula, said that the Western Cape was a hub of terror, that that story by the journalist was something that he must have got from outer space. I was there, Voice of the Cape reporters were there, and we never ever heard Minister Mbalula saying that the Western Cape was a hub of terror. What he did say in his speech was that for the South African government, Islamic extremism was not a problem. He said it didn't mean that they were not vigilant, but it was not a problem, and that he saw the greater problem in the Western Cape in particular as gangsterism and drugs. And let's just put that out there for the time being.